Welcome to The Lob, your home of in-depth coverage and analysis by These Football Times, a movement of journalism you can trust. Each week, we endeavour to bring you the very best coverage of the game, exploring stories from the past and present with analysis by expert guests from around the world. Find more of our award-winning content online and in print. In the meantime, enjoy the podcast.
Hi, and welcome to another edition of The Lob podcast from These Football Times. My name's Gary Thacker, and we're jumping into a new series of Mount Rushmore, where we invite a guest to pick their four favourite players, a goalkeeper, a defender, midfielder, and a forward from their team that they think should be honoured on the Mount Rushmore that sits above their home stadium. Co-hosting with me tonight is my good friend, Stevie Scragg. How are you doing, Steve?
Not so bad, Gary, not so bad. Looking forward to this one. A team we've not touched before. So yes, I think it'll be absolutely fantastic. A guest that has become familiar to TFT listeners over the last 6 months or so, and it'll make for a fantastic and a welcome return to this particular podcast as well.
Yeah,
which is always very popular and an absolute joy to do.
Excellent, matey. Excellent. There's a Stevie just alluded to there. We got one of TFT's own, our finest technical guru, with us tonight, Dave Bowler. Dave, welcome to Mount Rushmore, mate.
Evening to both of you. Looking forward to doing this.
Grand. Okay, so we're going to talk about a club which is an awful long way away from where Dave was born and where he lives now. So a guy who was born in West Bromwich in the West Midlands and now lives in Shropshire has chosen a team an awful long way away. So I'll let Dave tell you who it is and a little bit about why he's chosen this particular club to focus his Mount Rushmore selections on.
I'm surprised you can't tell me Scottish accent as I handle through all of this. It's the team tonight is Aberdeen. Like many, I remember watching them quite a lot in the 1980s when they were bestriding Europe and winning tournaments on the continent. But I got involved with them in work terms about 20 odd years ago, helping work on their on the matchday program. I still do some stuff for them now. I do their the match day program. I do a few bits and pieces on match days as well, match reports and the like for the website. So I thought rather than the going for the obvious for the Albion, which I'm sure Chris Lefkoski will pick up at some point, I'd go for Aberdeen.
Very generous of you. Chris is going to go for the baggy, so we can't have two selections. So it's decent of you, buddy, to leave the team for him. I'll leave you to discuss whether you're going to consider whether you can discuss the selection with him or whether he makes, but. Let's concentrate on Aberdeen for now. Obviously a club that has always sort of been, well, not always, but for a long time has been perhaps seen as the third team in Scotland behind Celtic and Rangers, but perhaps an unfair definition. As you mentioned, one time they won a European trophy under the time of Ferguson. So let's get the ball out and have a kick around. We'll start off with the goalkeeper. So before you tell us who you chose, Dave, just let me know about what your thoughts were on who came close.
There's quite a few decent goalkeepers in Aberdeen history over the period. I mean, Fred Martin, we're going back now to the 1950s. He was the goalkeeper when they won their first league title in 55. And Fred Martin was the Scotland goalkeeper in 54 at the World Cup, the first goalkeeper to play for Scotland in the World Cup. So he was in the running there, played 290-odd games for the club. More recent times, Theo Snelders, the Dutchman. Obviously, you'll know plenty about him, Gary, as a connoisseur of the Dutch game, the double cup winner in 1990, Scottish League Cup and the Scottish Cup, saved a Celtic penalty in the epic Scottish Cup final, ended 9-8 on penalties, so he was in the running. More recent times, Joe Lewis has been a stalwart for the last sort of five, six seasons up until this year. Jamie Langfield was there for, gosh, about 7 or 8 years before that. He saved a penalty the last time they won a trophy, the League Cup in 2014, so they were all there. But it came down to a choice of two. And when I tell you who didn't make it, you'll obviously be able to work out who did. But Jim Leighton's the one who missed out. You know, that's pretty harsh on Jim Leighton, Scotland's most capped goalkeeper, 500-odd games for Aberdeen, and there in the glory days of the 80s. I mean, wafer thin between him and the guy I did choose. But I worked on the basis that in front of him he had Willie Miller and Alex McLeish pretty much all of his career. So he had plenty of help, where perhaps my main choice had some good defenders in front of him, but not quite that magnitude. So
fair call, buddy. I mean, it's interesting with goalkeepers. I mean, we had a similar thing with goalkeepers the past, Steve, haven't we, where people have said that, you know, the goalkeeper they've chosen is a guy that sort of stood out in a poor defence or and not as strong a defence as other keepers have had the opportunity to play behind.
Oh, completely. I mean, I think it's one of these where Scottish goalkeepers have always been very, very traditionally maligned. But here you've got Aberdeen kind of like with a, you know, spoilt for choice, really. Dave has been spoilt for choice here. But yeah, you know, certain eras, you know, I can understand, you know, Jim Leighton's the obvious choice here, but, you know, sometimes a choice can be too obvious. You know, a goalkeeper, like you say, has maybe been spoilt by the defenders that he's played behind sometimes. You know, a goalkeeper who plays in less, you know, magnificent eras of a football club yet still stands out. You know, in a way, a Jim Leighton in that respect is damned. You know, just as a, you know, for my team, a Ray Clements will be damned in a way by the defenders that he played behind, and it kind of shields just how fantastic they were. But I can totally get why Dave's gone in the direction he has here. But yeah, you know, goalkeepers, you know, it's a thankless task, isn't it? You know, even when you're a legend, you're maybe not quite as much of a legend, or you're not as celebrated as you should be.
Yeah, definitely, mate. Good call, yeah. So, okay, Dave, so tell us who you've chosen, buddy.
So in the end, it was Bobby Clark, who was the sort of the mid-60s through till 1980. He did win the lot domestically with Aberdeen. In the end, he won a Scottish Cup, he won a League Cup, and he won the Premier League. I mean, he's an interesting character. He was an amateur at Queen's Park when he started out, and when Aberdeen took him on. And he only joined Aberdeen on the basis that he could continue to train and study in Glasgow because he was doing a teacher training course. So for the first couple of years, he was basically training with Clyde on a Thursday night and then travelling up to Aberdeen at the weekend for the games or meeting him in at the away ground. And in 67, when they got to the Scottish Cup final, I mean, this sounds incomprehensible now, but obviously the team was up in Aberdeen and they'd travelled down to Glen Eagles, I think, on the Thursday or the Friday before the game. And Bobby carried on training in Glasgow. So he made his own way to Hampden. He got on the bus and then the train into Hampden with all the... I spoke to him about this not too long ago. He said, I was on the tram going into Hampden. There were all these Celtic supporters on the tram with me. Fortunately, they didn't know who I was. And he got to the ground at sort of 1:30 or whatever it was and went into the dressing room. And he sat there and he sat there and he sat there. And 2:20, still nobody had turned up. He was sat in the dressing room on his own. And what had happened was Eddie Turnbull, the Aberdeen manager, he'd been taken ill the night before. He didn't travel to the game. So the team travelled down. And then it was the crowd for that cup final was 128,000, I think. The Aberdeen bus got caught in the crowd and they didn't turn up till 2:30. So basically they did no warm-up. They barely went out onto the pitch. The players appeared in the dressing room, got changed and played a cup final. Unsurprisingly, lost. They won the cup in 1970, beating Celtic. And then the following season, Bobby Clark kept a record 1,155 minutes without conceding a goal. Covered 12 games, I think it was. And Aberdeen were very, very close to winning the league that season, 70-71. There was a fire at Pittodrie, as we've covered in the decade series, which will be a bit later on in the year. And that really did scupper their chances of winning the league that year, because it sort of knocked down the main stand. It opened the stadium to the elements, which February, March time in Aberdeen, actually in August in Aberdeen, is pretty can be pretty hostile. So that ruined their chances there. But he did get his final. He finally got his league title medal in 1980 when Alex Ferguson had turned up at Pittodrie, and he won that completed his set. And they won the title, winning 5-0 at Hibs at Easter Road. And Alex Ferguson, as the final whistle went and they heard that Celtic hadn't got the result they needed, Alex Ferguson ran onto went straight for Bobby Clark and lifted him up in the air. And that I think that says a lot about him. You know, he's the third on the appearances list. Aberdeen, 591 games. One of them as an outfield player. No, two of them as an outfield player.
Really?
Yeah, he got replaced by Ernie McGarr for a period in 68, 69, I think it was. And Ernie McGarr went on to play for Scotland. So Aberdeen had two Scottish goalkeepers at the time, international goalkeepers. And he came on as a sub in one game, played outfield, and then played from the start the centre half in another game as an outfield player. But wisely, he chose to go back and get the gloves. And also for Stephen's benefit, Bobby Clark, you always think of him wearing that vivid yellow jersey, you know, so he stands out. So that's a particularly nice sartorial note on which to end there, I think.
Yeah, the vision of a sort of like a cheese and tomato sandwich, you know, the yellow and the red shorts. Stevie, I mean, there's a goalkeeper who's played twice as an outfield player, was carrying on to his two-tier training course while playing in the top division Scottish football, and caught a bus to the cup final.
Oh, magnificent, isn't it? I mean, he kind of walks in the footsteps of Fred Martin as well.
Yeah.
Because he started his career out as a as an inside forward. You know, he went and was dragged into the army for his national service and came out a goalkeeper. You know, so yeah, there's a little bit of kind of history repeating itself in that respect. But yeah, you know, you can't help but love the players of that era that, you know, traveled to the game on the bus, and you know, even with the fans that, you know, in eras, you know, that would recognise players. You know, I was hearing from stories going way back to kind of like Liverpool players doing exactly the same thing, you know, in the 50s and Billy Liddles and et cetera, kind of like getting on the bus for match days and travelling with the fans to the ground. And yeah, it'd be an absolutely incredulous thing to see nowadays, a Premier League high play base. I think even a League One or a League Two or a National League player now, you know, getting on the bus to get to the ground with the fans. But yeah, you know, Bobby Clark, you know, fantastic. You know, he travelled that whole distance from the mid-1960s to you know, winning the title in 1980. You know, what a player, decade and a half. You know, he sort of 17 caps for Scotland. You know, Ali McLeod took him to Argentina in 78, where, you know, he'd been unlucky not to go to West Germany 4 years earlier. You know, won his last cap in 73 for Scotland. 5 years after that, he's going as backup. One of the backup goalkeepers to Alan Ruff to Argentina. So, you know, it's that end of season, end of career kind of, you know, renaissance as well that strikes a chord here. You know, to have that big success of winning the league, you know, in 79-80 before handing the gloves over basically to Jim Leighton.
Into the sort of third series now, and longevity of a player at a club is a consistent factor in the people's choices. And then, as you say, you know, a decade and a half of one club, that's pretty impressive. You know, even with, you know, you're talking, you know, mid-60s to the end of the 70s, it's pretty impressive. And it earns a place in the fans' hearts, doesn't it?
It does. It's hugely impressive. You know, they become, you know, the cornerstone of a football club. When you get it, especially, you know, a goalkeeper like that, who, you know, the custodian, you know, it's the foundation of a team. You know, for a goalkeeper to be the, you know, the bedrock of a football club for a decade and a half is, you know, you can't be anything other than just an icon of the club, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a great choice. And I was really chuffed when I saw your choice for the goalkeeper, Dave, because it's a bit of my era. I remember my cousin went on holiday to Scotland and bought me a book back. It was the Scottish Football Annual, number 13. I don't know why it is, but it was 1968. And it was the year after Scotland had travelled down to England after the World Cup and beat England. The famous Jim Baxter, KPUP, and Bobby Clark was in that. And it was the first time I really come across the name. But yeah, great choice. Okay, now we've mentioned about how important defenders can be in defining not the quality of a goalkeeper, but perhaps how celebrated they are. So let's move on to the defence and tell us who came close, buddy. And there's plenty of choice there to go at, mate.
Not short of defenders, are they? At Aberdeen. I mean, going right the way back, Donald Coleman was one that I thought about. I mean, he played sort of either side of the Great War. We are going back. Won his first Scotland cap at the age of 33, and then came back and was the manager. He was a forward thinking. But he got his players eating raw eggs and sherry before a game. He got them free passes into the beach ballroom in Aberdeen so that they could improve their footwork. He coached in Norway, and he'd seen this weird development in Norway called the dugout. And he brought the dugout over to Pittodrie. Pittodrie was the first stadium in Britain that had a manager's dugout.
Yes, it was, yes.
And I think Everton were the first one in England that copied it. So just on the basis of that, he was pretty close to getting the nod. Martin Buchan, same sort of era as Bobby Clark, wasn't there that long, probably 4 or 5 seasons. Great player, great sweeper at the back. Youngest captain of a Scottish Cup winning team, 21 in 1970. So he was right in there. More recently, I mean, they've had some real stalwarts at the back. Russell Anderson in the last sort of 20 years, he played 400 games. Stuart McKimmy sort of came in at the tail end of the Ferguson era. Stuart Kennedy was a brilliant fullback. I mean, even more recently, Andy Considine has played 570-odd games, which in this day and age is just ridiculous. Anybody playing that number of games for a team, it seems. So he had to be thought about.
Yeah.
Once again, it came down to a choice of two. And once again, you'll know who the winner is when I tell you that Alex McLeish didn't get the nod. I mean, 689 games for Alex McLeish. A wonderful player. A real winner. Great in the air. Surprisingly elegant for a centre-half. But, I mean, you wouldn't argue with Alex McLeish either at any stage. And then he had a really habit of scoring really important goals. He scored in the 82 Scottish Cup final. Great goal from the edge of the box. Floated it over the Rangers goalkeeper and in. Then scored again in the Bayern game, the quarter final in 83. Fantastic footballer. Virtually all his career at Aberdeen. Again, I don't know how you leave him out, but Stephen says the obvious can be too obvious. In this particular case, the obvious is the only one that you...
Yeah, the McLeish and the guy you've chosen are a bit very much perceived as a partnership, aren't they? And the only other name I thought we might get chucked in and considered is Stuart Kennedy.
Yeah.
I'll probably have a mention. Stevie, thoughts on defence for Aberdeen?
Yeah, again, spoilt for choice. What a set of players. Dave's rattled off most of the usual suspects there. Yeah, Alex McLeish, a massive amount of admiration. I can remember Man United being linked with him in the 1980s and actually being quite worried that they'd sign him, at the time. A wonderful player. Stuart McKimmy's another. I think that whole era of Aberdeen side, you can all the names trip off the tongue. And all magnificently admirable. It's no surprise that it boils down to the two that it did, on the shortlist. And that's no disrespect to anyone who fell by the wayside there, because they were, magnificent. Even down to kind of like Andrew Considine, to play so many games for Aberdeen that he finally got the reward that his career fully deserves. So in more contemporary terms, they've got someone like that to point to, but. Yeah, Alex McLeish and his partner in crime, it had to really come down. I'd throw another name, Henning Bowl, into that one as well. But, I love the players like that who tip up unexpectedly in a way. Danish defender who was there in the late 60s, early 70s. I love the stories of those type of players who tip up, in an era when they just weren't knocking around in English football or British football, on a more widespread basis. They always appear magnificent curiosities. But yeah, I can fully get behind the selection on this one as well.
Yeah, quite right, Marty. So we're talking about Alex McLeish and his partner. So it's the yin to his yang, it's the Morecambe to his Wise, it's the Laurel to his Hardy. Who is it, Dave?
It is, of course, Willie Miller, just shy of 800 games.
Wow.
For Aberdeen. I mean, I was just looking through, I mean, he was always going to be the pick, but I was looking through the stats today. Aberdeen have won 19 honours in their history. Willie Miller picked 12 of them up.
Wow.
That kind of ends the argument, really, doesn't it? I mean that Miller-McLeish combination was fantastic. And I mean, obviously, Stephen will know that they kept Alan Hansen's caps down to fairly small figures that you'd think Alan Hansen would have got 60, 70, 80 caps for Scotland. And of course he didn't because of those two, I mean, they came as a pair. They operated brilliantly together. Miller was the sweeper. He great reader of the game. Ferguson described him as the best penalty box defender in the world in that sort of period in 82, 83, 84. I don't think many people would argue with that. 65 caps for Scotland, he got, and he was, just the whole talisman of that period. If you look at all the photographs of Aberdeen from that 10-year stretch, it's Willie Miller picking up a trophy, both arms outstretched. In the right hand, he's got a cup, and in the left hand, he's got his medal, and that's Aberdeen for about 10 years. basically. That's the whole iconography of Aberdeen. I mean, they put a statue up of Alex Ferguson about 12 months ago. I'm sure in the fullness of time, and perhaps if they move to a new ground, there will be a statue of Willie Miller holding up the Cup Winners' Cup, because that sums up the football club. But to be a captain through that period, and to cap, you know, you look at the characters in that team. You know, you've got McLeish, you've got Stuart Kennedy, as you mentioned, you've got Jim Leighton, you've got Gordon Strachan's in there, you've got Mark McGee in there, you've got, you know, John Hewitt, Peter Weir. You've got some pretty strong characters in that team. And to be the one that they all look to, and the one who, when he says you do something, they do it. I mean, that says pretty much everything about Willie Miller. Obviously, you know, he then went on to be a manager there, had a little bit of success. He was a director of football there for a period as well. I mean, you know, he's the absolute embodiment of the football club, really. And yeah, it may have been obvious, but you couldn't not pick Willie Miller for this.
Good to you, Stevie. I have three things I want to mention there after your comments on. Firstly, longevity there again. Secondly, I mean, Miller and McLeish, obviously a massive, strong partnership. And how good, thirdly, how good must they be to keep Alan Hansen out of the Scottish team?
Just a magnificent partnership, you know, and they dovetail one another perfectly. Totally get why they played so often for Scotland together, because they mastered Scottish domestic football at that point. Dave's absolutely correct. You know, the 1980s, certainly the first half of it, is embossed Scottish football with the image of Willie Miller in that, you know, one trophy, you know, always held at the stem of the trophy, you know, outstretched with the medal in the other hand. You know, I've got a book, you know, that had to have that, you know, that Cup Winners' Cup picture of Willie Miller in it, because it's just one that, you know, if someone says the Cup Winners' Cup to me, that is one of the go-to images, the very swift go-to images for me of the Cup Winners' Cup is that, you know, with Willie Miller holding that aloft in Gothenburg in 83. You know, he just seemed to lift trophy after trophy after trophy. You know, Celtic and, you know, less so Celtic, but Rangers were an insignificance at that point in time, as far as, you know, they were in a, you know, a fair bit of disarray with Rangers at that point in time. Everything seemed to be, you know, Aberdeen winning something, or if it wasn't Aberdeen, it was maybe Dundee United, or, you know, it was Celtic who were propping Glasgow up at that point in time and trying to keep in there. But yeah, you know, what a partnership they formed, you know, both at club and international level. You know, there's an international career as well that lasted for a decade and a half as well. You know, had it not been for injury, he probably would have gone to the 1990 World Cup to go along with his appearances in 82 and 86.
The only sort of concern I have about putting Willie Miller's countenance on Mount Rushmore is I don't know how many chisels I'm going to blunt, because he's hard as rocks as a player anyway. Okay, so that's Willie Miller joins Bobby Clark and Aberdeen's Mount Rushmore monument. So we're going to move further forward to the midfield now. And then again, I mean, looking at some of the players this morning who could possibly have picked, my word, there's some talent there, kiddo. So tell us who came close in your estimations, Dave.
We've talked about longevity so far. There was one guy who came close, Cuptie Mackay, they call him in Aberdeen. Derek Mackay, he joined from Dundee on a free transfer in 69. I think he only played about a dozen games for Aberdeen. The Cup were in 1970. They played Falkirk in the quarterfinals, and they'd had a flu epidemic through the squad. They tried to get the game called off, and they couldn't, and so they were just scratching around for a team. Derek Mackay, he played, scored the only goal. They won. He played in the semi-final. He scored the only goal and they won. He stayed in the team for the cup final. He scored two goals as they won 3-1. And that was basically the end of his Aberdeen career. So,
been there, done that, got the cup.
Yeah, we probably would have been pushing it to put him on Mount Rushmore. But, you know, I think he's got to be worth a mention. I mean, yeah, I suppose it's some of the obvious suspects, Gordon Strachan, you know, he's one that everybody would think about from that from that golden era. I mean, you know, he probably played some of his best football at Aberdeen, more so than he did at Manchester United even. Huge figure in that team that won the Cup Winners' Cup. Was going to go to Germany at one point in 84. He told Ferguson, a brave man, he told Ferguson in 83 that he was going to leave in 84. This didn't please Alex Ferguson a great deal at all for about 12 months. And then he was going to Germany, I think. I can't remember. I think it was Cologne he was going to go to. And in the at the last minute, Manchester United nipped in and had his signature. So, but a great player, able to go past play, you know, past defenders and scored goals and a proper schemer. You got somebody like Owen Jess about 10 years later. Again, he was another stalwart of the club, famous, I suppose, at Aberdeen for the 95 League Cup semi-final win against Rangers when he's playing keepy uppy, which to the disgust of Paul Gascoigne, who went to try and chop him in half after that. The 83 team, I mean, it's Neil Cooper and Neil Simpson in the middle, both of them Aberdeen through and through, going through the ranks at the club. Neil Simpson went back afterwards. I think he's been there about 20 years again now, working in the youth academy and developing the young players. So he's another one who's really interesting. Zoltán Varga, who was only there again for a season, joined from Hertha Berlin after a betting scandal, and left after about 12 months to replace a fellow called Cruyff at Ajax. He must have been quite good. You got Billy Stark in the 80s who came through. And I mean, the difficulty is a winger, a midfielder, or is he an attacker? So I mean, I've probably got one or two who could have gone in the midfield in the attacking.
That's all right.
Me attacking ranks, but again, more modern times, guys like Johnny Hayes and Noel McGinn, who played on the flanks for Aberdeen, again, both well over 300 games, made a big contribution to the team. I think there's been a few in the last few years, guys like Ryan Jack, Kenny McLean, who could have gone on to be in consideration. But of course, the game's changed. And, you know, we've talked about these guys who played 300, 400 games and had that longevity. Well, now, you know, same with most clubs, England, Scotland, whichever country you want to look at it, unless you are the top two or three, if you show quality, somebody else is going to come and pick you off. And obviously, Kenny McLean came down to England, played for Norwich. Ryan Jack went to Rangers. Talking about the defender, Scott McKenna ended up at Nottingham Forest, you know. So it's difficult for more modern players to get into the running. But, yeah, they were amongst the ones I was thinking of. My choice for this, which I'll come to in a moment, is going to be a little bit more controversial, but you'll understand when I talk about it.
Fair enough, buddy. Another couple of names I was going to chuck in, Jim Bett. I thought, yeah, whatever, you know, coming to consider another guy, Arthur Graham, a bumper Graham, who apparently is why Graham Hunter, who's obviously an avid Dons fan, using at bumper Graham is his Twitter handle because of Arthur Graham. I mean, Stevie, there we are with some fascinating names we rattled off in midfield, and it used to be the case that, you know, almost every top club had a Scottish midfield player playing. It just seemed to be something in the DNA, you know. I mean, look at Liverpool. The likes of Graham Souness and, you know, Man United. All the top clubs have had these Scottish midfield players, and you know, a lot of those names fit nicely into that profile, don't they?
They do. They always. It's the commitment, you know. It's a bit of a stereotype, but sometimes stereotypes. There's truth behind stereotypes. You know, Scotland produced so many fantastic midfielders, and yes, you can have that argument over, you know, is a winger an attacker or a midfielder. You know, I'd say most people say 4-4-2 rather than 4-2-4, so, you know, I'd to them being midfielders. You know, Joe Miller is another one I'd throw into that mix as well. You know, two different spells at Aberdeen, a spell in between with Celtic. When he left Aberdeen for Celtic, Liverpool were actually sniffing around him as well back then. You know, so good enough for Kenny Dalglish to take a long, serious look. You know, if not, you know, actually bid for him, I think. But, you know, Celtic were willing to pay that bit extra and go that extra mile for him. So, yeah, you know, totally spoilt for choice. You know, Gordon Strachan, you know, he spent more time at Aberdeen than he did at Manchester United. You know, he did 7 years with Aberdeen. You know, and what was it at Man United? He did, I think he did 5 years at Old Trafford. You know, so, you know, in a way, you know, everyone's think, you know, looks at him and connects him to Manchester United and Leeds United because of the league title success, and less so with the passing of time as an Aberdeen player. Yet, you know, he was there for the most pronounced successes. You know, Aberdeen kind of, their success kind of slowed down after he went. You know, he had a huge influence on that successful Aberdeen side under Alex Ferguson. You know, and should, you know, shouldn't be undersold as an Aberdeen player. You know, a magnificent player across the board, but you know, his contribution to Aberdeen shouldn't be undersold either. But yeah, again, spoilt for choice.
Indeed.
You know, because Aberdeen have, I think, considering, yeah, they have this great period, you know, mid-70s to mid-80s, you know, and I had success in the 50s as well. But there's been some awfully lean times for them as well to consider. But to still come up with so many candidates for each position is just a testament to kind of how influential, you know, Aberdeen's, you know, recruitment and the youth system and their eye for a player has been across the years. It's quite incredible, really.
Yeah, you're right, Matt. You're absolutely right. Before you just you give us the guy you pick for midfield, which I'll say it might be a surprise to non-Aberdeen fans. It might be a bit of a surprise, and a lot of people, you know, when you know they hear the name we've just discussed, Gordon Strachan and Jess, Jibet, Neil Simpson, they'll say, "Well, why this guy?" So tell us who it is, Dave, and tell us why this guy.
Well, I worked on the basis that Mount Rushmore, it is obviously about great players and so on, but it's also about people who embody the club and personify the club in some way. And Davy Robb, the Brush, he's one of the great Aberdeen cult heroes, I think. And I mean, I could talk about him all night, frankly. I mean, I've had to make notes because there's just too many stories. And also, I want to see how you do your sideboards on the... I guess you wouldn't say he was the greatest player that they ever had. I mean, he sort of shunted between playing up front and playing midfield, I suppose, probably an attacking midfielder is the way you'd look at him. But, I mean, he was also hard as nails. He was he described himself as a sorter outer, as an enforcer. When he asked Eddie Turnbull, who was the manager in the late 60s, early 70s, why he got picked, Eddie Turnbull used to say, "Well, because you're me." And Eddie Turnbull had played in the famous five forward line at Hibs, but he was the hard man, I suppose, of that team. David Robbie started at Chelsea actually on the ground staff, got homesick and ended up coming back to Scotland. But he was a character. He gave absolutely everything to the game. You know, whether he'd had a good game, a bad game, or whatever, he'd always, you know, leave everything on the pitch, as we have to say these days. He had an encounter with John Gregor Rangers fairly early on in his career, and Turnbull had told him when he gets any stick, don't let him show that it hurts. So John Gregor basically had thumped him, knocked him on the floor, and Davy Robb got up and laughed in his face, and John Gregor said, "Christ, what do they feed you? Raw meat?" And that was kind of the way he played. He was, you know, he played like he was on raw meat. I mean, he won the Scottish Cup in 1970. He scored the winner in 76. A bit of a not a cleanest connection with the ball, but he ended up in the net. And in a lot of ways, that 1976 League Cup win was crucial, because that then started to get Aberdeen winning again. It was the first trophy that Willie Miller picked up, and they were kind of on their way. It was Alan McLeod who was the manager at that point. He was one of those guys that made other people play. Jim Leighton tells the story that they were playing a friendly at the start of the season one year, and he was in goal, and he's having terrible trouble with his goal kicks. He was slicing them into touch and this and that, and he'd had enough. And at one point, he called one of the defenders over and said, "Right, you take the goal kick." Davy Robb shouts to the referee, "Stop the bloody game." He walks over to Jim Leighton, grabs hold of him by the throat. "If you ever do that again, I shall kill you." "Okay, referee, start again." And that's the kind of player Davy Robb was. I mean, he was, you've got to do it right. He used to favour white boots. I always think you've got to be quite good if you've got white boots. And Eddie Turnbull said to him, "Christ, son, if I got your touch, I wouldn't be drawing attention to my feet." So that's the Davy Robb story. But every team's got somebody like that. He was the kind of guy that if you were in the stands watching the game, you'd see yourself in him. That's the way that you would play. You know, you would give absolutely everything. You would run after everything. You'd chase every ball. You know, go into every tackle. Try and, you know, whatever. He was that kind of player. And then he went off to America to play for Tampa, Tampa Bay at one point. And of course, in the NASL, there was a lot of camaraderie at that point, and he used to knock around with Pelé and Beckenbauer and Cruyff. And he was telling, he'd tell the story of they went to a nightclub the one time, and he was with Pelé and said, Pelé said, my name's Pelé. Do you know Davy Robb? They ended up backstage at a Fleetwood Mac gig, a bunch of them, while he was over there. And he got talking to Stevie Nicks. And they both got bored. And Stevie Nicks said to him, this party's really terrible. So they ended up in a nightclub together. It was in another restaurant, and Olivia Newton-John was there. This is just before Greece. One of her entourage called over to him and asked him to join their table. And he did. And then she invited him back to her room after dinner. And again, we'll draw a nice veil there. But frankly, if that's not good enough for going on Mount Rushmore, I don't know what is.
Well, I'll tell you what, mate. When your nominations come through, I don't know the player, but the lookalike. I didn't have a quick look anyway. I thought, bloody hell. So the sideburns a bit. I mean, I was sort of broken in on complicated chiseling when I had to do Henrik Larsson with his dreadlocks. So I'll get to that, because I think it's important that you do that. And it's interesting, you know, you said about his goal in the League Cup final. Did you say it was League Cup final? Yeah, I mean, that's not the only time he scored, apparently, then. So, but as you say, we'll draw a veil over that. Players like Davy Robb, Stevie, they're the players that people identify with, you know. They might not be the best player in the park, but the guys, as Dave says, they give 100%. And players, fans, want to see that. You know, if a player gives all he's got, then that's the kind of, that's no more, can you?
He fits that 70s Maverick down to a T, you know, because he ticks so many boxes as well, because he even played in defence. You know, the 78 soccer bowl, he dropped into defence to cover for injuries, and he's the man that gives Tampa Bay, you know, a little bit of hope in a hopeless scenario with setting up the late goal that brings them back into it for, you know, at least gives them half a hope of getting back into the game. You know, so yeah, he could play up front, he could play in midfield, he could play at the back. You know, he had all of the brilliant kind of Hollywood stories behind him. He had the sideburns, he had the whole lot. You know, he could do whatever he wanted, really, on and off the pitch, by the sound of it.
Indeed. Okay, Davy Robb is going to be number three on the Mount Rushmore. So we're going to advance the forward line now. And there again, I mean, you know, we said this on sort of the goalkeepers, which was probably a fat packet thing. So much choice in the amongst the forwards. So let's go through the ritual, Dave. Tell us who came close, buddy.
Well, I mean, it goes all the way back to the 20s. I mean, the great Alex Jackson, one of the Wembley Wizards, he had a season at Aberdeen before he moved on to Huddersfield for £5,000, which was a ridiculous amount of money back at that stage of the game. Benny Yorston in the 20s scored loads and loads of goals before he disappeared off the scene because of the great mystery that swept Pittodrie. There's still nobody's quite sure what happened, but there's talk that there was a betting scandal. And one Saturday, the team sheet came out and half a dozen of the team were missing and never played for him again. And it's gone into folklore as the great mystery. And he was one of the ones that was involved, so he would have scored a lot more goals, I think, over the years had he survived that. Graham Leggett in the period after the war came down to England after that and played for Fulham, but he was a big part of that team of the 50s that was, you know, Aberdeen's probably first great team, really. You know, that period when they actually started to win one or two things. You all know plenty about Charlie Cook,
just a bit.
He was a bit of a wizard at Aberdeen. There was absolute uproar when he was sold off to Dundee, and obviously then went on to Chelsea after that. But I mean, you know, what a fantastic player Charlie Cook was. The archetypal winger with the ball on a bit of string, really. He was a fabulous player. In terms of the goal scorers, I mean, they've had some fantastic goal scorers. I mean, Steve Archibald was one of the ones. Great. One of my favourite stories is with Steve Archibald. He scored a hat-trick in a game, and Ferguson wouldn't let him have the match ball. So he went into Ferguson's office after the game and picked up the match ball, and Ferguson said, "No, you're not taking that home. That's ours. You're leaving that here." So Archibald volleyed it off just over Ferguson's head off the wall and around the office, which He might not have had the match ball, but he certainly got some balls to do that in Alex Ferguson. Again, we come to that 80s period. You got Mark McGee, you got Eric Black, great, you know, fantastic goal scorers, both of them. Eric Black, so good in the air. Mark McGee scored loads and loads of goals, loads of important goals for him. Frank McDougall was an insane ratio. He scored 44 goals in 69 games for Aberdeen in the mid 80s. Just after that, had to finish with a back injury. Otherwise, he would have, you know, probably broken every record that they'd got. And perhaps Aberdeen's late 80s into the 90s might have been a very different story from there. Drew Jarvie, 130 odd goals in 386 games. And when I mentioned that he was in partnership with Joe Harper, and say that Joe Harper's not going to be on the outing, that's going to be a shock to many. I mean, Joe Harper's the great Aberdeen goal scorer, 199 goals in 300 games, the king of the beach end, two spells there, scored in the cup final, scored every week virtually, it seemed, from an Aberdeen perspective. A great, great finisher. And then a bit more recently, Billy Dodds, Duncan Shearer, had a partnership for a spell in the 90s. And then again, even in more recent times, you've got guys like Adam Rooney, who scored 88 goals in just under 200 games, scored the crucial penalty in that 2014 League Cup final to finally win him a trophy for the first time in 20-odd years. So, yeah, they got there's no shortage of choice amongst that. I'd got Arthur Graham in amongst me attackers rather than me midfielder. So he pays your money, he takes your choice.
Indeed.
But
wherever you want to play, it works for me, kiddo.
There was one who I decided had to go on Mount Rushmore. We'll come to him in a second.
Okay. I remember Joe Harper playing, and he's one of these players. We're talking about Hansen not getting perhaps the caps that most people would assume he had. And Joe Harper suffered a similar sort of fate. I don't know how many he played, but it wasn't enough. It wasn't what he deserved. He's so unlucky, really, with the timing of his career. Stevie, thoughts on Aberdeen forwards, buddy?
I think it's the one. Aberdeen's forwards is a bit of a peculiarity, really, because they have so many talented players, yet so many of them tended to have the better days or the most prominent days elsewhere. You know, you look at Steve Archibald. I was always a huge fan of Steve Archibald. That, you know, incredible Tottenham side of the late 70s, early 80s. You know, everyone was looking at Hoddle. Everyone was looking at Ardiles and Villa. You know, for me, it was always Steve Archibald, the long sleeves pulled down over his hands. You know, the wheeling arm celebration. You know, I thought he was a wonderful player to watch, Steve Archibald. But yeah, you know, so with Duncan Shearer, you know, another underrated one. I'd throw Frank McDougall in there as well, who was, you know, scoring goals for fun for a couple of seasons in the mid-1980s for Aberdeen. Ended up having to walk away from the game early in his late 20s, spondylitis, I think it was, that he had. You know, he might have been in with a half a chance of going to the 86 World Cup. Had he, you know, been well enough and you know, could have gatecrashed that particular, you know, crowded field of players. You know, Joe Harper, the only player this side of the Second World War to score more than 30 league goals in a season for Aberdeen. You know, a lot of talented strikers that would often, you know, say have better days elsewhere. But for anyone to beat, you'd have to say anyone to beat Joe Harper in particular. You know, say, you know, Archibald, McDougall, you know, a lot of these kind of, like, you know, did really well for them, scored a lot of goals, high concentration of goals in, you know, less than 100 games for the club. And that's the trick with some of these strikers. A lot of goals in a, you know, in a short blast. And what you're looking for your Mount Rushmore is someone who's, you know, ran the gamut. You know, you're looking for the striking version of a Willie Miller or a Bobby Clark. You know, that's what you're looking for. That one to leave a long lasting, you know, period of sustained success at a club, or to, you know, to make that big, big, massive impression. But yeah, you know, to edge out Joe Harper is something. It'd have to take something special.
It would indeed, mate. I just, an interesting sideline, when Steve Archibald came over here to play for Barcelona, and he struggled first. I mean, he came good at the end, but one of the press conferences here, they take no prisoners. It's straight to the throat, and the guy said to Venables that, so what does Steve Archibald do exactly aside from nothing? Which, you know, I mean, But he proved what he did afterwards. Obviously, he was a big success there. But going back to your choice, then given what Steve you said, this guy's going to be someone special.
When I first made my list for this, it was Joe Harper, because, I mean, it's just a no-brainer, isn't it? It's got to be Joe Harper. He's got 199 goals. But if this is, you know, the iconography of a football club, if you're going to go to the trouble of knocking down half of a mountain to put four faces on, then it's got to be something iconic. And it's got to be John Hewitt. It's that goal. It's that goal against Real Madrid. That's the defining goal of Aberdeen Football Club, isn't it, in the finish? You know, they won a European trophy, which only Celtic and Rangers had done. They also went on to win the Super Cup. So as every Aberdeen fan will, they'll be screaming at this podcast. Don't forget to mention they're the only Scottish club that have won two European trophies.
Good lad.
It's got to be John Hewitt for that goal. And also he scored the winner in the quarterfinal against Bayern Munich as well. Pitodri's greatest night, as they say. You know, when the place went absolutely berserk after a 0-0 draw in Germany, and then going 2-1 down with about, I don't know, 20 minutes to go in the game or something, and coming back to beat Bayern Munich 3-2 to go on and then go on and ultimately win the Cup Winners' Cup. It's got to be John Hewitt for that goal, because that is the iconic moment. You know, that you've got the iconic pose with Willie Miller and the trophy, but that goal is the one that defines the football club. But I mean, you know, it wasn't the only goal he scored. 89 goals in 360-odd games. I mean, that's a pretty decent return. Also, the fastest goal ever scored in the Scottish Cup. He scored after 9.2 seconds against Motherwell in 1982. And that, again, in its way, is iconic, because that's the first goal in that cup run in 82 that ended up in the beating Rangers at Hampden in the cup final, which then, of course, qualified them for the Cup Winners' Cup. So, I mean, in a sense, he started and ended that whole story with those two goals. They're the bookends for it. He scored twice in the 86 Scottish Cup final, won three league titles, four Scottish Cups, a League Cup. I mean, he was a bit of a super sub. He tended to come on in games rather than start them. But he was the player that always seemed to make an impact. He was always in the right place at the right time. Yeah, you know, a natural goal scorer. Yeah. In that sense. And I mean, even this morning I was thinking, well, maybe I should just let them know that I've changed my mind. It's Joe Harper. But no, in the end, it has to be John Hewitt, I think, just for that goal.
You know, it's interesting, you know, when teams win the Cup Winners' Cup, you know, sometimes you can get a lucky run to the Cup Winners' Cup. You beat Bayern Munich, beat Real Madrid. You know, that there's no gimmies there. There is no gimmies there. And the one thing that always sticks in my mind about that goal is when he runs off with his arms in the air, his socks rolled around his ankles. It's just, as you say, it's an iconic moment. And, you know, I'm going to chisel him up. I'm going to do him in that pose. I might do Miller with this sort of Christ the Redeemer pose almost. And I'm going to do Hewitt. It'll take me a bit longer, but it's worth the effort. And an iconic moment, as you say, in the history of Aberdeen Football Club. Stevie, what do you think about the choice, matey?
He's the man who scores the biggest goal in the history, without a shadow of a doubt. How could we not have him in there? You know, the man he climbed off the bench for in that 83 final was no slouch either. Eric Black, you know, another fine player. You kind of get why Hewitt was often, you know, 12th man for Aberdeen. But, you know, the 12th man can sometimes be very, 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 you know, valuable to a football club. And Hewitt, you know, he was the man who supplied the moment, and you know, his place there is more than justified.
Absolutely, buddy. Absolutely. So there's our four, and I think this is the first time I've ever done players in action pose. So I mean, Willie Miller with his arms stretched out wide, perhaps with Hewitt with his arms.
Davey Robin action.
Well, I was going to say Davey Robin might be sliding tackle. Studs up sliding tackle, I think, perhaps. So, I mean, that's our four choices for Mount Rushmore and Aberdeen. And I think, you know, you can discuss them as we have to, but all worthy choices, Dave. So we just sort of finish off with asking you to select Mr. Aberdeen. You know, it can be one of your choices there, or it can be somebody else entirely. If we ask you to pick a player who is Mr. Aberdeen, who's your choice, buddy?
If it's a player, I mean, this will be particularly bizarre. It's a player who played one game, Teddy Scott, He played once for Aberdeen in the 50s. And then after that, he served the club for 49 years altogether. After he'd finished playing, he was a trainer. He was a coach. He was the kit man. And every Aberdeen player who went through that period from 1954, 55 through to about 2000, will say that Teddy Scott was the guy who held the football club together. There was one point where Ferguson was having one of his tantrums as and he was going to sack Teddy Scott for some minor misdemeanor. And Gordon Strachan said to him, "Well, okay, and which 10 people are you going to get to replace him?" And that was kind of how Teddy Scott held that football club together. Every player will, you know, that's gone through that football club will have a story about Teddy Scott as a mentor, as somebody who they could go and talk to, somebody who gave him a bit of advice, a bit of coaching advice. I mean, yeah, the scale of who he was he got a testimonial in, I think, 1999. Yeah, and backroom people don't get testimonials at football clubs. Very, very rarely. And Alex Ferguson brought the full Manchester United team up in 1999 to play in his testimonial at Pittodrie. Now that, you know, given that that's the treble year and all of that, I think that tells you absolutely everything about how important Teddy Scott is to Aberdeen. So he might have only played one game, but I think if you ever ask anybody up there who Mr. Aberdeen is, I think it's him. So I think he's a worthy addition.
It's a brilliant choice. I mean, I don't think we've ever had anybody else choose as a Mr. their club. Has only played one appearance for them. But from what you said, obviously, the longevity and the service you gave to the club, obviously, is something that, as you say, fully justifies the title. How's that for a choice, Stevie?
Oh, fantastic choice. Possibly one of my favourite choices as far as kind of like, you know, the icon of a club, the cult hero. Because, you know, these are the people that, you know, football club, you know, these are the ones that the football club will be built upon. You know, it's the support staff. It's all of that. It's like walking into a school and the teachers, you know, the teaching demographic changes over, you know, very, very swiftly. Yet, you know, it's the people who support them behind the scenes that are there for years and decades and decades. Same with football clubs. You know, it's the people who are, you know, they are the ones that know. You know, it's the porters that run the hospitals. It's that type of thing.
Yeah.
It's, you know, these are kind of like the characters in which, you know, a football club is allowed to grow and thrive and function.
Yeah. Teddy Scott fully deserving his place on Mount Rushmore alongside Clark Miller, Rob and Hewitt. So that was our Mount Rushmore on Aberdeen Football Club. So massive thanks for Dave not only for the choices he's made, but also the info and stats as well. So thanks, Dave. I hope you enjoyed it.
It's been a pleasure. It's all those 20 years working on the programme, listening to Malcolm Panton and Kevin Sterling giving me all this information. It hasn't been wasted, has it?
Stevie, good fun?
Oh, fantastic. You know, fantastic topic, fantastic club. Great guest, Dave.
Yeah, brilliant. So, okay, so that's it from Mount Rushmore for this episode. Catch us on the next one and keep an eye out for more of the Lob podcast from These Football Times. Cheers, bye.
Many thanks for joining us today on The Lob, a These Football Times production. For more of our content, check out our award-winning print magazine featuring some of the game's foremost writers, artists and photographers, exploring areas of the game rarely covered in high-end print. For now, we look forward to you joining us again soon.